It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The Congressional Budget Office projects 14 million people would lose health care coverage next year with this Republican health care proposal. By the year 2020, it estimates 21 million fewer people would have health care coverage. That number would grow to 24 million in the next decade. The CBO also predicts the GOP plan would decrease the budget deficit by $337 billion over a 10-year period. Senior Trump administration officials came out quickly to say they strenuously disagree with that coverage assessment.
We believe that the plan that we're putting in place is going to insure more individuals than currently are insured. So we think that CBO simply has it wrong.
Speaker Paul Ryan has been bracing for a bad projection because this Republican package doesn't force people to buy insurance.
The one thing I'm certain will happen is CBO will say, well, gosh, not as many people will get coverage. You know why? Because this isn't a government mandate.
The White House budget director noted the CBO was wrong on health care before.
If the CBO was right about Obamacare to begin with, there'd be 8 million more people on Obamacare today than there actually are.
This morning, the president predicted on Twitter the GOP will unite and blasted the current law. Obamacare is imploding. It is a disaster, and 2017 will be the worst year yet by far. Republicans will come together and save the day. Top Democrats are taking swipes at the president.
Like much of his administration thus far, Trump care is another game of say one thing, do another.
Well, he would know about that. Sandy Rios, good morning on this Tuesday. That was Chuck Schumer, of course. Republicans say one thing and do another, which is, of course, pretty much the disease that inhabits the bodies of most people in Congress. All right, well, it's good to be with you this morning. And, of course, the CBO did release their report, Congressional Budget Office. And I remember, you know, Mick Mulvaney, we played the clip yesterday, who is leading the charge on the budget for the president, said he was anticipating this report. It was either going to be good or great. And you might recall I scoffed a bit at that because I knew that wasn't going to happen. The CBO, first of all, is partisan. It doesn't do what it's supposed to be doing, which is without kind of a hand on the scale, releasing numbers. So I have to defend the Republican leadership on this one. CBO did a hit job on them, I think, and I'm not surprised. But I want you to hear the rest of Mike Emanuel's report before we move on. Let's listen.
One conservative critic said on Fox News Sunday the president is willing to cut a deal.
The president's been very clear that he wants negotiation. They're open to change. I hope they'll work with us. I hope they'll have the same. I hope the speaker and our leadership will have the same attitude the White House does, which is let's work together and find a plan that works for the American people.
And one Senate conservative urged Jordan and others in the House to hold the line.
Do not walk the plank and vote for a bill that cannot pass the Senate and then have to face the consequences of that vote.
But the president and Ryan have suggested failure to fix the problem could lead to a bloodbath.
I do believe that if we don't keep our word to the people who sent us here, yeah.
And this afternoon, the Senate Majority Leader reiterated the need to act.
Healthcare markets are teetering closer to the edge of collapse. The Obamacare status quo is simply not an option. We have an obligation to the American people to repeal and replace Obamacare.
The next step is the House Budget Committee is expected to take the two separate components that were assessed by House committees last week and combine them into one bill. It is still early here on Capitol Hill with people returning from their home districts, but it seems those who like the package found something to like in the CBO projection or disagree with it, and those who dislike it are still against the plan.
All right, see, that was Mike Emanuel, Fox News. You can see why. It's a very tense situation. You've got, that was Jim Jordan that you heard in the last half of Mike's clip, Congressman Jim Jordan from Ohio, who is a key part of the Freedom Caucus, Many of the guys have wanted him to step up and run for speaker, and he just hasn't done it because he's so highly respected. But that was him talking about, we promised that we would repeal. We promised we would do that. We have to do that. And then you heard Senator Tom Cotton, who's all over saying to the Republican conservatives in the House, don't do this. Don't do this. It would be a mistake to do this. This is a bad bill. Mike Lee is saying the same thing as are others. And so you see what's at stake here. The Freedom Caucus now is being targeted, all 40 members, by I think it's the American Action Network, who is that organization very closely working with the House leadership. That appalls me. Targeting conservatives because of their objection to this, and Paul Ryan forcing the notion that his bill is what the members of Congress ran on. This is what we ran on, he keeps saying. And no, that's not true. Members of Congress ran on full repeal, which this bill is not. And they didn't even run on replace, I have to say. That was something that President Trump added. So it's really, so Paul Ryan's reputation's on the line. The members of the House Freedom Caucus are fighting for their political lives because they're going to be targeted with these ads. And then there was talk about President Trump, you know, targeting them as well. I don't think that's going to happen anymore because I think they had a good sit down with him last week and explained to him their very real concerns that this is going to be a really bad bill that's going to be wrapped around his neck. It will be blamed on him, and they're trying to help him. And so you can see why everyone's fighting, you know, and trying to. Well, we'd just like to say that many of them are trying to get it right. Now, Paul Ryan was on with Brett Baer last night and did quite a long interview in response to the CBO. The CBO basically says that 24 million people will be uninsured under the new Ryan Care Plan. That's what I'm going to call it because it makes it clear. But it says that the $337 billion deficit will come down a decade within the GOP health plan. It's very confusing. I know it is. But Paul Ryan, I want you to hear what he has to say about this CBO report when Brett asks him. Let's listen.
I think if you read this entire report, I'm pretty encouraged by it, and it actually exceeded my expectations. Brett, Tom Price and Mick Mulvaney there mentioned the estimates before were that more 25 million people would be on Obamacare today. Less than half that are. But look at what they said, the reason why they think this uninsured would happen. We're saying the government's not going to force people to buy something they don't want to buy. And if we end an Obamacare mandate that says you must buy this government one-size-fits-all plan, guess what? People aren't going to buy that. So, of course, they're going to suggest that if we're not going to make people do something they don't want to do, they're not going to do it. That's really what's behind this. What I'm encouraged is once our reforms kick in, what the CBO is telling us is it's going to lower premiums. It will lower premiums 10%. It stabilizes the market. It's a $1.2 trillion spending cut, an $883 billion tax cut, and $337 billion in deficit reduction. So, of course, the CBO is going to say, if you're not going to force people to buy something they don't want to buy, they won't buy it. But at the same time, they're saying our reforms will kick in and lower premiums and make healthcare therefore more accessible. And by the way, Brett, I just want to say one more thing, then I'll stop talking. This is just part one of a three-part plan, and that's why I'm excited. Just this, they say, lowers premiums, stabilizes the market, gives people more choice and freedom. Part two is Tom Price at HHS brings more choice and competition, lets the states open up markets, which will lower prices even more. And part three are the other bills that we will be passing. Interstate shopping across state lines, association healthcare plans to let people bulk buy insurance nationwide, medical liability reform, those will drop premiums even further and make healthcare even more accessible.
Ah, where to begin? You know, I think that I have to say that the one part of this is absolutely true, that when they talk about the CBO gives these predictions about all these people will not be insured. They'll be dropped off. And Nancy Pelosi has a very artful way of saying it. In fact, let's listen to her. This is what the Republicans fear. This is why they run scampering to the corners, because Nancy Pelosi stands and says things like this. Let's listen.
They're taking 24 million people, pushing them off their coverage. And as they do so, They are implementing the biggest transfer of wealth in our history. $600 billion going from working families to the richest people and corporations in our country. So in terms of insurance coverage, it's immoral. In terms of giving money to the rich at the expense of working families, it is indecent and wrong.
Okay, so it's immoral. It rips health coverage away from 24 million people, and it gives, you know, transfers wealth to the rich. This is the things that the left always says. And, you know, Paul Ryan is right about this. Certainly, when you don't demand that people buy insurance, you don't penalize them. You don't pass a bill that says every single American of the age of X must buy health insurance. You must, or you'll be penalized. You will, there will be a tax penalty. So that does force people to sign up, even though they don't want to. And that was the huge controversy, as you will recall, about that Supreme Court decision by John Roberts. You can't force people to buy. That's not constitutional. Of course, the Supreme Court under John Roberts decided it was. So people have been forced, but they have coverage, but they don't have health care. That's what I keep saying. It doesn't mean anything to have a piece of paper. If you can't see a doctor within your, you know, within your geography, who can actually see you, and when your deductible is so high you can't get the procedure done, you might as well not have insurance. So you're forced to pay for the premium, and then you can't pay for the deductible, so you end up having to pay for everything anyway. It's just a ridiculous state, so that, of course, if you don't make people buy it, then people won't buy it. You're not throwing them off. They just won't buy it because they don't want it. They might as well just go to the doctor and pay for it. And the problem here is, and this is true, this is where President Trump muddied the waters when he said we're going to replace it. This is the problem, because we are not a socialistic system. We are not Europe. We do not have an obligation to make sure that every single American has health care coverage. It is a freedom and a privilege. It is an obligation if you work. It is something you aim for as you try to make more money, that you have good health care coverage. But it's not a guarantee that you cover every single person with great health care coverage and make it affordable. We can't possibly bear the burden of that. So they're trying to do something that really is impossible as far as I'm concerned. And in regard to the CBO, I thought that Newt Gingrich made a very good point last night, and I wanted you to hear what he had to say, because he knows what he's talking about. He was the Speaker of the House. They did balance a budget, I think, two or three years in a row. He knows a little bit about the CBO. Let's listen.
They should abolish the Congressional Budget Office. It is corrupt. It is dishonest. It was totally wrong in Obamacare by huge, huge margins. I don't trust a single word they have published, and I don't believe them.
But the head of it is a Trump appointee, and in many ways, I think people misjudge what they're supposed to do.
This is a black box.
I mean, their job is to figure out whether or not this is something that could get through on reconciliation, right?
They lied.
Not to make a judgment about
the
whole
bill. Let me be very clear. Okay, I helped balance the budget four straight times, the only time in your lifetime. We fought the Congressional Budget Office every time. When Obamacare came out, they used the architect of Obamacare as their advisor on how to score Obamacare, and their scoring, you go back and look at it, it is a totally dishonest, disgustingly wrong, and it is that whole thing should be abolished. They should replace it by putting out to bid and having 3 to 5 professional firms score these things. Nobody has an exact score. It's not possible. And even tonight, Dr. Tom Price, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, pointed out there are whole sections of this bill they didn't score. So I really do think it's disgusting, and I'm really disappointed that the Republicans have not abolished the Congressional Budget Office, because it is so profoundly dishonest.
All right, so that's what Newt Gingrich says, and with that, we're going to take a break. Now, one little tidbit here. The House Budget Committee meets Thursday. There's a lot of snow in D.C., so the committee meetings have been postponed. But Thursday, they're supposed to be meeting. And it's possible that 4 members of that committee might vote to tank this whole thing. It's possible. It'd be very risky for them to do that based on the things that I've just told you. But it is possible. So we'll see. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
The famous German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche once observed that there is an advantage to having a bad memory. The advantage is being able to have a first-time experience of joy or surprise over and over. Well, there may be something to that in the mental realm, and there definitely is in the spiritual realm. The prophet Jeremiah wrote that God's mercy and compassion are new every morning. Every day brings with it a fresh encounter with God's everlasting love and never-ending patience. Just when we think God has grown tired of our sin or weakness, He reveals His mercy anew every morning like a first-time gift. This is David Jeremiah, encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover God's mercy on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com. Start your journey home today.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Kids at Valley High School in Des Moines, Iowa are patriots. They love America, and they routinely show up at basketball games waving American flags and wearing the red, white, and blue. But instead of getting kudos for loving their country, the kids are being denounced as racist. School administrators issued a formal apology after students from an opposing team took offense at the pro-America clothing. Des Moines North High School has a large refugee population. Many of their students got upset. Some called it blatant racism. One coach demanded to know what the patriotic kids were thinking. We live in the United States of America. Our flag is red, white, and blue. Sometimes we chant USA. It's because we take pride in our nation, the land of the free, the home of the brave. And anybody who has a problem with that is free to take their basketball and dribble somewhere else. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
President Donald Trump's revised travel ban is scheduled to take effect in 3 days, but before then, it will need to clear two legal challenges filed by a growing number of states. Hawaii is seeking a temporary restraining order to block the executive order.
It's saying if you're from one of these six countries, now six, you are presumptively a terrorist.
The lawsuit claims Imam Ismail el-Sheikh, an American citizen, now can't bring his Syrian mother-in-law to the U.S. But government lawyers argue the revised travel ban is much more narrow than the first and provides for waivers on a case-by-case basis. Oral arguments will be heard Wednesday by Federal District Court Judge Derek Watson, who was appointed by President Obama. Meantime, Washington State has now been joined by five others, Oregon, Maryland, New York, Massachusetts, and California, in its effort to have the nationwide injunction that was slapped on Trump's original travel ban be extended to the Executive Order 2.0. Judge James Robart will make that decision. His injunction drew angry tweets from President Trump, but was upheld by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, perhaps not coincidentally, the same court that will likely have to rule again.
They target judges who they believe are going to give them a favorable ruling. They try to bring these cases in circuits where they're most likely to have these injunctions upheld.
At the heart of the state's cases are calls made by then-candidate Trump for a ban on Muslims coming into the U.S. But Department of Justice lawyers, citing Supreme Court rulings, contend candidates are not government actors, and statements of what they might attempt to achieve if elected, which are often simplified and imprecise, are not official acts.
Okay. There is simply no basis for the court to assume that because he said something as a candidate, that is the reason he's doing something as the president. And there's no historical basis for that.
Government lawyers will now have to respond by tomorrow with a motion to lift the injunction on that revoked travel ban, a flurry of legal briefs aimed at getting a decision before Thursday's deadline.
All right, that's Dan Springer of Fox News. And it's confusing, isn't it? Everything's confusing right now, I think. Sandy Rios back with you, but I know someone that can kind of sort this out for us, and it's Hans von Spakovsky. He is the manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and senior legal fellow at the Institute for Constitutional Government for Heritage Foundation. He's a senior legal fellow. He knows all about the law. He was with the Justice Department for a number of years, and he's a good friend. Hans, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Sandy.
Hey, I'm confused about something that Dan just now said, and let me start with that. I'm in an amusing mood here. The old executive order, what, a month old, what's going to happen with that? What was he trying to say there in that report?
I think what he was trying to say was that the Justice Department is going to go in and basically ask the judge to lift the injunction he issued against it by saying to the judge, look, the whole situation with regard to that old order is moot, because the president has issued a new order. The old one is no longer in effect. Please dismiss the lawsuit. Washington State and all the other states that filed are going to come in and say to the judge, no, Your Honor, you ought to extend that injunction to cover the newly issued order, because oh, it's just as bad as the old order. That's what they're going to do.
Okay, so now you've spent not a small amount of time penning your opinions about this new order. And do you think it's an improvement? Is it a necessary improvement? What they
did with the revised order was they tried to deal with the issues that were raised by the Washington State District Judge and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which upheld the injunction. Let me be clear. I think both courts acted wrongly. They didn't issue decisions based on the law. They issued decisions based on their political views, that they don't like this policy. They didn't follow the law. But what the revised order does is it tries to take care of their concerns. One of their biggest concerns was, oh, well, this affects people who have already gotten visas to be in the United States, like permanent resident aliens, and it raises due process rights about that, their visas being taken away. So this order makes it clear it only applies to foreigners who've never been in the U.S., who are applying now for visas to get in. It doesn't apply to anybody who's already here.
Okay, so that took care of that part, but it didn't really stop people from suing because they already started. In fact, you wrote about Hawaii just last Friday being the first state to lay down the gauntlet and sue. And so tell us about what that was all about. On what basis?
Well, that lawsuit is, look, this is all very serious, but I frankly was laughing when I read Hawaii's lawsuit. And let me give an example of what I mean. You know what one of their constitutional claims is? One of their constitutional claims is they're suing on behalf of Hawaii, and a Muslim who lives in Hawaii and is the head of one of the state Muslim associations, and he complains that, he's a U.S. citizen, but he complains that because of this temporary 90-day suspension of entry from countries, including Syria, his mother, who is a Syrian citizen, is not going to be able to visit. Now, the last time she came to the United States was 2005. So she hasn't been here in 12 years, and yet they're basically saying it's a constitutional violation that after not bothering to come to the United States for 12 years, she might now actually have to wait 90 days to get an entry visa. I mean, that's how dumb this new lawsuit is.
Well, plus, as you, I think, point out in this article, she doesn't have a right to come here.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
one has a right to
yes,
come
that's
here.
That's exactly it. You do not have a right. And look, that's been demonstrated in case after case after case. In fact, listen, one of the U.S. Supreme Court cases on this issue is a case in which the U.S. Supreme Court said a decision by the U.S. to not allow the war bride of a U.S. citizen, this was shortly after World War II, to come into the country. The U.S. had a right to deny her entry, and the Supreme Court wasn't going to review the decision. I mean, that decides it, but that doesn't mean, as you and I both know, that liberal judges are going to pay any attention to the actual law on this. And, you know, they sued in Hawaii. Why? Well, because they wanted an Obama judge, which is what they got, and they wanted to be in the Ninth Circuit.
So now it's Hawaii, Oregon, Maryland, New York, and I missed maybe one or two others that are suing. Now, after you wrote this article that came out last Friday explaining how Hawaii's suit, and I think Dan Springer alluded to this, but these are venues stacked to the advantage of the left, right? Explain
right.
that, Hans.
Well, Barack Obama, before he left office, ended up appointing about 40%. Of the federal judges throughout the entire country. That's at the lowest levels of the trial courts all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And what they've been doing in filing these suits is picking federal district courts in states where they are assured that they're going to get a liberal judge assigned to their case and where there's going to be a liberal court of appeals looking at their case. That's why they picked the far west, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, for example, is the most liberal appeals court in the country. Something like 90% of their decisions are overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, and they are a court known for not following the law and instead basically doing what they think is supposedly justice based on their own personal political views.
So this will end up being stopped again. I mean, how could it not? Just like the last one was stopped, and it's going to end up in the Supreme Court, is it not?
Yes, I think that's for sure, which is why it's even more important that we get Neil Gorsuch, the nominee for the Supreme Court and Justice Scalia's seat, confirmed as quickly as possible. And, you know, the last news we've gotten on that is Senator McConnell saying that he wants to get Gorsuch on the court by the beginning of April.
Hans, I have not spoken to you about this, but I'm sure you saw this story, so I apologize for springing this on you, but I just read this morning that Tennessee now is suing the federal government over refugee resettlement. Have you read that story?
I did. Well, what's going on there is actually kind of the opposite of what people may think. There is a federal Refugee Resettlement Act that Tennessee opted out of. In other words, they did not want the federal government bringing refugees into Tennessee. Despite the fact that the state opted out of it, the federal government has been bringing refugees into Tennessee. Last year, they put in 2,000 of them. And what Tennessee is saying is, look, until you, federal government, are willing to pay fully for the cost of these refugees, we don't want them here. Because, you know, when refugees come in, it costs the state money, everything from medical care to education. And Tennessee is saying we don't want them here unless the federal government is going to pay for them. So it's actually not so much a suit against the Trump administration, but really against past actions of the federal government, basically what the Obama administration was doing.
You know, I was reading this article from the Tennessean this morning, and this is really interesting, Hans. It says, let's see. So joining the lawsuit are John Stevens, a Republican from Huntington, Tennessee, and Terry Lynn Weaver from Lancaster. And they say, The Constitution does not allow the federal government to force me, as the elected representative of the 24th Senate District, to implement federal programs while they sit in Washington, insulated from the consequences. And so, but here's the part I wanted you to read. You know, and we've talked about it on the air, it is these huge charity organizations like Catholic Charities of Tennessee who are expediting this refugee resettlement order in spite of the fact that Tennessee said they don't want to participate. So Catholic Charities, as they are nationally, are making millions and millions of dollars to do this. But I want to read to you what Holly Johnson, she's the state refugee coordinator for Catholic Charities, this is what she says, because, hang on one second, the problem is they're trying to say that the funds through Medicaid, with the threatened loss of nearly $7 billion, 20% of its overall state budget, is going to refugees and not to Tennesseans. So Holly Johnson, who coordinates Catholic Charities, says this in response. The state doesn't pay for any special services for them because they're refugees. They're not eligible for anything that you and I aren't eligible for.
Yeah, I know. But of course, that's Tennessee's complaint isn't that they're giving them anything special. It's that they are basically competing with their regular residents for state and local money. By the way, I should mention something I thought it kind of amusing, and it has to do with the same issue, refugees. I actually checked the federal government records, and Hawaii, which is complaining about the treatment of refugees in this big lawsuit they filed. You know how many refugees they took in last year from the Obama administration?
No.
Seven.
Are you kidding me? His home state. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, here they are so compassionate, and they only took in seven refugees.
Well, you know what, Hans,
they're now suing over.
Do you remember seeing after the protests, after that first executive order, there were all these kids protesting outside the airport, and there was a rogue, one of these guys that does these on-the-street interviews. And he went from student to young person, just seriously, hey, I'm working with this organization. We're trying to find a home for these refugees that are coming in. And we want to know, you know, do you have a room in your home? Do you have a bed that you could, will you be able to give food? He's just real eager. He's taking their names. And one by one, they make an excuse about why they personally can't help the refugees. But they're out there protesting that they can't come in. It's really funny.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that, but that makes perfect sense, because I mean these protests, frankly, are just foolish. The whole refugee thing too. Look, all this order does is say, look, we're temporarily suspending entry for the same reason. We want to be sure that we've got the vetting, the ability to check the backgrounds of these people before they come into the country to ensure that they are not dangerous. And look, this is at a time in which ISIS very plainly on its website says that it is doing everything it can to use the refugee process to infiltrate its terrorist fighters into countries around the world.
It is an amazing thing. And of course, what some person came out a couple of weeks ago saying that there was, I think, an official statement, might have been from Homeland Security, that most of the refugees who come into this country and commit violent acts are not radicalized till they get here. So therefore, we should just go ahead and bring them in, because it isn't until they come here that they actually start, in their terms, becoming radicalized and doing harm to people. So it was more nonsense. So that's the reason to bring them in. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's just like, look, I'll tell you a similar nonsense. You know, President Trump has complained about Americans being victimized, having members of their family killed otherwise, by illegal aliens who are in this country. And the response to that always is, aliens don't commit crimes at a bigger rate than regular citizens. That's not true, but that's the claim they always make. And, you know, my response to that always is, you're completely missing the point. It doesn't matter whether illegal aliens commit crimes at a lesser rate than other Americans. The point is, none of the crimes they commit would be happening if they didn't come in.
Hans, listen, you know? I'm putting you on the spot here. Can you stay just a few more minutes?
Sure, I'm happy to.
Okay, let's talk, because I want us, maybe we have a few more things to say about that, but then I want to turn to Preet Bharara. and that whole thing, that phony scandal about him being allegedly fired by President Trump. Let's talk about that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Teen girls and young women face an onslaught of media and advertising that sells a certain beauty standard. Next time on Focus on the Family, Jesse Manassian encourages women to unplug from advertising and accept God's definition of true beauty. Learn more on the next Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
American Family Association began in 1977 as the National Federation for Decency. Founded by Don Wildman, our mission is to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church. American Family Association is one of the largest and most effective pro-family organizations in the country, and it's because of God's blessings and the generosity of people like you.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There's a scandal unfolding with ominous implications for our government and potentially for the national security, but you'd never know it from the negligible attention this still unfolding debacle has received to date from the mainstream media. Presumably that's because it doesn't involve Donald Trump or his subordinates or Russia. Instead, the scandal implicates dozens of Democrats in the House of Representatives, many of whom serve on its most sensitive committees. For years, these legislators have relied on a handful of Muslim contractors from Pakistan to manage their official information technology needs. What could possibly go wrong? The short answer is plenty. For example, the one news outlet that has covered this scandal closely, the Daily Caller, says these unvetted IT operatives have had unmonitored access to all of their employers' emails and other data. We need a full damage assessment now. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
President Trump at home faces another foreign policy challenge. A weather-related postponement of German Chancellor Angela Merkel's visit tomorrow won't put off a reckoning over differences on immigration, the future of the European Union, and trade. Despite Merkel's diplomatic niceties,
the United States of America are a key trading partner for Germany, but also for the entire European Union. This trade is of advantage for both sides.
The reality is Germany exports twice as many goods to the U.S. as the U.S. exports to Germany.
That was Doug McElway. I just think it's interesting Angela Merkel was coming. Now it's been delayed because of the snow. And that relates to just a random story that I saw this morning from the Minnesota Star Tribune, and that is that there was a man, 98 years old. His name is Michael Karkok from Minneapolis. He's been here for decades, and now they have identified him as a former commander in an SS-led unit that burned Polish villages and killed civilians in World War II. So it looks like they're going to extradite him, and I don't know that that's firmly stated in here, but that's what they're looking to do, and that he'll have to go back and face his alleged crimes in Nazi Germany. Isn't that ironic? After all, he's 98 years old. They said the sentence that he would face would be life imprisonment if he's found guilty. Okay, so that's very interesting. All right, my guest is Hans von Spakovsky. Hey, Hans, isn't that a story? Isn't that something about that gentleman in Minnesota?
Well, it is, and it's actually relevant to something, as you know, that happened over the weekend when that crazy leftist confronted Sean Spicer when he was out on a personal errand at an AP store. People have maybe seen the video of this crazy leftist confronting him and calling him a fascist and things like that. This young American woman has no idea what she is talking about. She wants to see real fascism. Look at what this German Nazi did. That's fascism, not people in the United States who have a difference of a political opinion over what to do, for example, about illegal immigration.
You know, I'm going to get to Preet Bharara in just a second, but this reminds me of something else. This morning I just read that membership has tripled in the Democratic Socialists of America. You know, and that means communism. This is what the Soviet Socialist Republic, the Democratic Socialist Republic. I could go on and on with names. This is the term that she used. It's tripled in America, Hans, and it is a lot of our young people and a lot of immigrants. I think too, because the lines between our form of democracy and socialism have been so blurred that our kids don't even know. They don't even know what fascism is, what socialism is, and it's pretty scary.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's very true, and people, I don't think those kids, understand that the communist ideology is responsible for the largest mass murder of humans in our entire history of civilization, and that's the philosophy they're embracing.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that being said, let's turn back to the chaos we find at home. We know that Preet Bharara, who was the U.S. attorney out of Manhattan, who has been allegedly, well, I guess he is, I guess it's a fact, pursuing cases for Mayor de Blasio and some other major figures, is claiming that he was fired unjustly by the Trump administration. And you weighed in on that in an article on Fox News, which we'll put on our Facebook page. But what's going on here, Hans?
This is one of those phony political spectacles that gets created in Washington, particularly, unfortunately, by the left. Look, there's really nothing to see here. Every political appointee knows that they only serve at the pleasure of their president, the president who appointed them. And they all know that their jobs end when a new president is inaugurated. The U.S. attorneys around the country, they head up the offices, there's 94 of them around the country, all of them are political appointees no different than the attorney general, the heads of other cabinet agencies, and all of them are replaced when new presidents come in. Bill Clinton, in March of 93, replaced all of the U.S. attorneys across the country. Janet Reno, did it for him. Barack Obama replaced all of the U.S. attorneys. And so last week, the Trump administration, Attorney General Sessions, asked the remaining 46 U.S. attorneys to leave. Why didn't they ask 90-something? Well, because the rest had already left, because they know they don't have a job. And yet this guy is trying to make a big deal over the fact that he was asked to leave, just like all the rest. There's only one reason for it. He wants to make himself a political martyr. He knows it'll help him with the resist Trump at any price crowd. And he is a very politically ambitious person. He's mulling a run for governor or mayor. And what did he get out of all this? A huge rise in his name ID, which is something that all politicians like.
You know, Hans, wasn't it, as I recall, unless I've gotten my facts wrong, didn't George W. Bush come under terrible fire for doing the same thing? They made such a big deal out of this, like he was doing something terrible because he replaced the U.S. attorneys that were put in place by Bill Clinton.
Well, actually, it was even worse than that. In 2006, well into his second term, he decided to replace a handful of U.S. attorneys. I didn't really give any reasons for it, but I don't think that they believe that these U.S. attorneys were carrying out his priorities when it comes to law enforcement. The Democrats created this phony scandal out of this, like this was some big deal, and he had done something wrong because he replaced his own people, the people that he had appointed. And that's an example of what I mean in how the left, with the help of their friends in the mainstream media, create these phony scandals out of nothing. There's nothing to this at all, particularly this. This office does a lot of corruption investigations. That won't stop just because this U.S. attorney has been asked to leave, because the standard procedure is the first assistant, that's the number two person inside each U.S. attorney's office, immediately takes over. That person is a career lawyer, and they continue whatever investigations and prosecutions are ongoing when the U.S. attorney leaves.
All right, so we talked about how Barack Obama had replaced 40% of federal judges, and we see the effect of that on the judiciary and their decisions. We see it on the immigration order, and there are other countless ways we see the imprint of the left in the judiciary. But these U.S. attorneys actually have a great deal of influence, do they not, Hans?
Oh, yeah, and that's why it was important, very important, that Jeff Sessions do what he did. Look, the U.S. attorneys are the ones who carry out the priorities of the president when it comes to law enforcement. That's why they need to get new people in there. So, for example, as we all know, this president actually wants to enforce our immigration laws. The prior president did not. So if you want that to happen, you have to get in new U.S. attorneys who are going to make enforcing our immigration laws a priority. And you can't do that with the leftovers from the Obama administration.
You know, speaking of the Justice Department, it seems to me that Attorney General Sessions, with the exception of recusing himself week before last, on the Russian interference situation with Trump, has been quiet. He's been kind of quiet. At least I haven't seen or heard much from him. What do you know about what's going on at Justice and about the new appointments and new placements? Are you encouraged, concerned? What are you seeing?
Well, I think at the moment he's being quiet because he's trying to get a grasp on what's going on throughout one of the largest cabinet departments in the federal government, because he's only got a handful of people to do that. His number two person, his number three person still haven't been confirmed. I know, for example, that in the Civil Rights Division, which is one of the biggest divisions, they're the ones that led the attack on voter ID, things like that. They've got probably 800 employees. Right now, there are only two Trump political appointees in there trying to get a grasp on what they're doing and bring them back under control. So at the moment, he's only got a handful of folks to help him try to get a hold of a huge department. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, the Democrats are slowing down and doing everything they can to prevent confirmations of all these lower folks at the more subordinate levels, because they want the situation that Sessions is in there.
Yeah, it's just hamstrung. It really is amazing. And, of course, under justice comes the FBI, which I think people don't often realize that FBI is just part of justice. Yeah. Serves at the behest of the Attorney General and ultimately at the behest of the President. But so we have Director Comey, and you and I have not spoken, I don't think, since Director Comey allegedly said to the New York Times a week ago Sunday, boy, the news goes fast, that he wanted the Justice Department to say publicly that the FBI did not surveil or did not wiretap or didn't order it through FISA court. The wiretapping of Donald Trump. And before that, of course, the FBI had refused to make a public statement that there was no connection between the Trump campaign and the Russians, no collusion. He had refused to do that. I just want to know your thoughts about that and about Comey's behavior.
You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday who had been very high up in the Justice Department, and who knew Comey, who said that he for the last year he has been acting bizarrely, and no one quite understands what is going on with him. Look, I think people are taking the fact that Trump said wiretap and using that from a technical standpoint to say, oh, well, there wasn't any wiretap going on. But what nobody is saying is was there surveillance going on without necessarily having wiretaps imposed on people's phones? Well, last year, the New York Times reported that there was surveillance going on in Trump Tower of particular individuals in the campaign, and yet here we have the FBI director saying, well, the Justice Department ought to issue something denying that wiretapping was going on. Well, the FBI director has his own PR guy. Why doesn't he issue a press release saying that? Why is he depending on justice to do it? I'll tell you why. I don't think he has the ability to issue a press release saying that no surveillance was going on, because these newspaper stories had sources inside the FBI saying there was surveillance going on.
This is very dangerous, you know. And of course, Comey then appeared at a banquet last week and said, you know, he's going to serve out his complete term. Do you see President Trump changing his mind on that issue at all?
I don't know if he will. I think they ought to. Like I said, people that know him and know the way he's been behaving the past year and a half have said he's been acting bizarrely. I think he's made numerous mistakes. And I actually think he ought to be replaced.
And one last question before I let you go, Hans. I'm really curious. You know, some House committee has demanded that Donald Trump provide evidence the evidence he has that he was wiretapped. What is that all about? And what are your thoughts about them? I heard Paul Ryan saying, "Oh, I haven't seen any evidence." They're all poo-pooing it. So what's going on here?
You and I both know Republicans are always the best at shooting themselves in the foot. You know, they always do that. The Democrats certainly wouldn't be doing this. If they're interested in this, then what they ought to do is very quietly go over to the Justice Department and get briefings on exactly what was happening with the FISA court. Was surveillance done? Instead, they're trying to feed into what the Democrats are claiming with this public spectacle. That's not the way to handle this.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered a lot of territory this morning, Hans. Listen, I really appreciate your wisdom and your input always and your experience. So thanks for joining us. Hans von Spakovsky will put his article on Preet Bharara on our Facebook page. Also, his piece about Hawaii's challenge of this new executive order on immigration. So, Hans, thanks a lot. Have a great day. Enjoy that snow.
Thank you, Sandy. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.